Love That For You, the podcast celebrating the late bloomers and trailblazers of all walks of life. I'm Kelly, and on today's Tuesday Tea, you're all in for a real treat. We have a guest that has been months in the making, it feels like. She is a Humanitas Prize nominee, former foster care social worker turned television writer, and co-EP extraordinaire on such shows as House of Pain and Fuller House, just to name a couple. So welcome, my buddy and my industry commiserator in crime, Kelly Griffin. Yay! Kelly, this has been like, what, feels like 6 months.
It might have been a year, I ain't gonna lie. A lot has happened.
You are worse than a bill collector.
Yeah, so I was like, you're tracking me down like a bill collector.
I mean, you're just that amazing. You're like one of the first people I thought of for the pod. And so thank you again. I'm so excited. To start things off, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word? Ooh. Acceptance. That is my
acceptance.
Favorite word right now. Yeah, that's my newest word. Because probably the reason why it took you so long to get me on, all the multiple things that have happened in my life in the past like 9 months, I've had to just accept. It's less stress, and it's kind of a Buddhist kind of a thing, and I'm not a Buddhist, but I'm just saying it is. We are in less pain and we suffer less when we accept that things are as they are. It's when we try to change things or make things not be what they are or have expectations and stuff or like that we cause ourselves all the stress. So,
Kelly,
I had acceptance.
Already you feel better, because I don't know if you've seen in Deadline and Variety all these like work contraction articles, but it's been really hard for me, and I'm sure you're probably going through it too. That just made me feel better. Thank you. It's really hard to accept it. Like, you just want to change the reality and you just have to accept it, and it just makes things so much easier.
Yeah. Because it really just causing yourself a lot of undue stress, because it is what it is. That's
wow, that just made my day already. Thank you. No, seriously.
I'm glad.
Good start. Okay. On the flip side, what is your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Yep. Amen.
It is so bad. I'm so, and I apologize to my kids every day. It is so bad. Yeah, what the fuck is said a lot in my household. When you have a 12 and a 14-year-old, you say a lot of what the fuck.
They say that every day themselves. With
they
or without
probably
you.
Do.
Yeah.
But they just do things and you're just like, oh my God, what the fuck?
Oh, it's so satisfying though. What is your favorite sound?
Ooh, water.
Yeah, it's relaxing, right?
Yeah, this is the water sounds. Trickling brooks and streams, all that. Water running, just water.
What is your favorite food?
Anything Italian.
Yeah.
I am and seafood. If I can combine the two, that is a happy place. Like linguine and clams, stuff like
that's
that. I am literally making chicken parmesan tonight at the request of my kids. So, yes, any type of pasta, spaghetti, ravioli, everything. Oh my God, I love Italian food.
That leads me to my next question. Where is your favorite place to visit? Is it Italy?
Oh, no, that's the funny part. No, I am an island person, which is crazy because I realized as I'm getting older, I kept thinking, I have yet to go to London, Spain, Italy, like any place like that. I'm just like, hey, Aruba, well, Hawaii's not out the country, but Hawaii, Bahamas, any place where I can lay up and have a Mai Tai or a cocktail.
Hell yeah, girl.
Yeah, I want to touch some Caicos, also like that. So that is my happy place.
Really?
For traveling, yes.
All right. Now this is going to be a good one for you. What is your favorite quote?
Ooh, well, a couple of things. Several things popped in my head at once. But Marianne Williamson's quote, which I can, it's such a long quote, but they also had it in the movie The Killing the Bee.
Yeah.
Basically not dimming your light so that you appease other people. That is, but it is a much longer quote, and I cannot think of it because that caught me off guard. But yes.
I love this.
Yeah, and it is not the darkness that we're afraid of, it's the light that we're afraid of. All this is all this one long quote, which is really, really true, and something I've always had to check in with myself that, you know, you say you want your own show, you want this, you want that, and when things start happening, we get scared. But we ask for it though, you know what I mean? So even now, at this very moment, is a conversation that my girlfriend and I just had late last night, because we have to move. And my landlord is selling the house and we have to move, but probably, I'm not lying, probably two 2 weeks prior to that, we were talking about a friend of mine that stayed with me. I didn't charge her any rent. And she thanked me because, one, it allowed her to get back on her feet financially, get away from the dude that she was with. But also, she had a minute to not stress and process, and she decided what she wanted to do, like, going forward. Right. And so for us, I have been saying to my girlfriend, if I could just have 3 months where I don't have to pay any rent and just, like, not have to worry about, you know, or the industry and that, not have that stress over your head.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and then right after that, the landlord said he was going to sell the house. But he said, you don't have to pay rent for the next 3 months.
Whoa. Oh, my God.
So, yeah. I got exactly what I said. I threw out there. It's like, I just need 3 months.
Whoa, that's manifestation at its finest.
Yeah.
Whoa. So. Okay. Love that. I'm sorry about the move, though. I mean, have you found a place yet?
Nah. We haven't. Since we have 3 months rent free, we're not gonna leave until the 3 months.
So. Yeah. Exactly. Hey, that's amazing. I love this. I love manifesting things. I've been trying it. It hasn't happened yet, but now you've inspired me to try again. All right, what is your favorite movie?
Ooh, I have multiple favorite
movies. Ooh, I believe it.
Real romantic person. So The Notebook is at the top of my list.
Oh, really?
And so anything that makes you cry and it's like, oh my God, you know.
I didn't know this about you. You're romantic?
Fried Green Tomatoes. Oh my God.
Girl, I'm crying already.
I've watched those and I just be crying. Like, it's so good.
Oh.
Really good. Dead Poets Society, yes. Stuff like that. Those are all my, those really heartfelt, moving type movies. But I also love, like, The Best Man is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And there's a couple others out there. I will watch something like Pitch Perfect and crack the hell up. But, like,
I love Pitch Perfect. It's so good. That's actually a good transition to this question. What is your favorite karaoke song?
Oh, you know what? I don't really do karaoke by myself, but my girlfriend and I, we do carpool karaoke. We sing in the car all the time. But our go-to song is Keisha Cole and Jaheim, I'll Change For You.
Well, now you need to sing it for me.
I've Changed For You.
How's
so
it go?
There's two parts. I gotta look at the lyrics while I'm doing it.
I'll have to look it up after.
I sing
Jaheim's
part. She sings Keisha Cole's part. I'll cut my plaits, but I won't cover up my tats. Like, I'll do what I need to do. I'll change for you.
I'm in a karaoke league. So this is, like, something I'm always looking for is good duet songs, because it starts off with a solo round, a duet round, and then a group round.
My God.
I'm usually the duet round, so I'm always looking for good duet songs. Would you say it gets the crowd pumping? Is it like a pump-up song?
No, it's like a real mellow type R&B jam.
I mean, I'm all
so
about that.
So Jaheim and Keisha Cole.
Okay, I'm gonna look that up. All right. What is your favorite compliment you've ever received and or like to give?
Ooh, I like telling people I like their smile. I get that compliment a lot about my smile. But
you do have a great smile.
Well,
it
thank
is true.
You. Yeah. I like giving that compliment because it makes people smile.
It's true. Actually, yeah. I just smiled when I heard it.
When you say I love your smile, and you go,
oh,
and you just smile bigger.
You like to receive it and you give that. Same one.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. What is your favorite drink, alcoholic or non-alcoholic?
It's got to be alcohol.
Same. I'm a tiki girl, and I feel like you're a tiki drink girl, too.
I am. You know, it's funny. So, literally, right before getting on with you, I was texting my neighbor. We went out for Mai Tais.
Place do you go to?
I go to, Chi Dynasty in Los Feliz.
Oh, yes! They have great ones.
Mai Tais.
That's what I've heard.
I am known for my two things. I'm known for my margaritas. I make them every party, anytime anybody has an event, they go like, can you make margaritas? So I make margaritas, and I also make a very expensive rum punch. It is so strong and so good, but it costs a lot of money to make. 6 different flavors of rum. So each bottle alone is like, you know, $10 to $15.
You better charge people. So. open your own bootleg bar. Come on now. That's expensive. I mean, tiki by definition.
So good.
It's expensive. Like all the alcohol.
But again, islands. That's why I told you I go to islands and why I haven't been anyplace else.
Yes. I love, I'm very, we're very similar. See the
warm weather and
together.
A tropical drink.
We stick together, girl. This one is good. Good one for you. What is your favorite book?
Oh, now that's interesting too, because yesterday I was packing up all the books in our house because we're moving.
Oh.
And I didn't even realize what was funny. I thought I only, in my head, I actually thought I only had books with Black authors. I really did.
Really?
And then I have shelves and shelves of books. And as I'm packing stuff up and deciding what I was going to donate to the library, what are we going to take with us, I had a whole slew of James Patterson books and John Grisham books, which I forgot about those, and I read them, and they were really good. Yeah, very good novels. But as far as anything else, interesting enough, one of my, not favorite books, but a book that I really love is actually Jodi Sweetin's Unsweetened, because I worked on Fuller House with her.
And that's right.
Working with her on Fuller House as an adult and as a sober adult, I know her as just that person. I don't know any other side. So reading that book of her experience from when she was on Full House and growing up and going through addictions was fascinating to me.
Really?
Because
reading it
was like, no way. Would I know of her now? You know what I'm saying? So
sad, or is it a mix?
Yeah, she did a lot. We actually had talked about it, and we started writing a pilot based on the book, but then it kind of brought up a lot of bad thoughts and stuff for her, and she felt like she had just gotten away from doing interviews where people ask her about her addictions and stuff.
I see.
So she didn't want to like open it back up and bring it all out again.
That's fair.
So we kind of changed about our minds about that for now. But no, it was actually really good.
I'm going to read that. I love celebrity memoirs. So I'm always.
Yeah, I have a lot of those. So I have Rob Lowe's, Queen Latifah's.
Ooh.
I have Russell Simmons. I have a lot. I discovered that too. Must be a thing I do. Even including Gandhi's. Autobiography of Gandhi. I was like, I have a whole autobiography section.
Holy
yeah, so when I was packing up books last night, I was like, oh, wow.
Did you ever write an autobiography?
I will probably write some type of memoirs when I'm fully out of the business, because there's a couple of executives that I want to talk about that I can't talk about now.
Oh, man, I'm not going to get into that with you. Shit, because I'm sure maybe there's some overlap. All right, well, I'm looking forward to your memoir because it's juicy. I can only imagine. What was your favorite subject in school?
I think I'm going to say English, and not because I'm a writer.
Oh,
but I went to an all-girls Catholic school in high school. There was a nun that was my teacher that I did not like, but later wrote a letter to her when I graduated and thanked her because she pushed me as far as writing is concerned. Like, I really did not like this lady.
Huh.
And then later on, like, when I was done with, you know, the class, I was like, well, I actually learned some stuff, so I owe her an apology.
Really?
What's funny is, I want to say her name was Sister Anne, but I'm not even sure. I don't fully remember.
Well, that's formative then.
It was really just the experience of having somebody push me. And I want to say, you know what's crazy? And I don't think, I don't know if this was high school, I could be crossing in high school, also college experience, but I remember having to write an essay where you had to like describe doing something. And mine was about making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I was like, you know, you get the bread and you put peanut butter on one side and jelly on the other side. And I got like a D. And I was like, wait, what? Like,
why? Did you have to put like,
because
I get a thing out of the
yes,
bread?
Like,
open.
You had to actually, yes.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, so that pushed me to think differently. Like, you know, like when you describe something, don't assume that the person you're describing it to knows exactly what you're talking about. Describe it.
Like,
so I had to say, you know, you get a loaf of bread, open loaf of bread, take out two slices of bread, put like that kind of thing. It was.
Wait, I love that. That's a really good point. Like,
but
I would.
Those are the things that I think I fought because I was young and was like, basically, you gave me an F, what? Fuck you, or D, whatever. Like, you know. But then later on, was like, you know what? That absolutely makes sense. Like,
Wait, I love this.
It definitely is carried over now when I get notes. So you know, I get notes on a script, and my initial reaction is like, I didn't know what you're talking about. What do you mean, add this person?
Sometimes
like, you
they
know.
Don't.
But then
fair.
When you go to start your rewrite, you're like, wait a minute, this kind of does make more sense here. Like,
all right, these are just fun, quick ones. Do you have a favorite season, color, smell, any of those three?
Season is, I want to say spring.
Right now.
When the weather is about 74, 5, whatever, but not beaming sun, just nice.
Spring, and then color, smell, any of those?
Color
anything?
Used to be bluish, but I'm kind of vibing off of purples lately.
Vibing off of purple, eh?
It's really, no, seriously.
That's
when
so
I color code like my calendar stuff or wherever, like purples and shades of purples and
Interesting. Yeah,
different shades of purple. It's been,
oh, okay.
Something about that has been great. And then what else was that thing?
Smell.
My girlfriend, she wears different perfumes. It was crazy because I'm allergic to a lot of this stuff. But there's certain perfumes or certain smells that she wears that make me smile. That just, it's a very nice scent or whatever. But I'm into scents anyway. We have, we burn incense or, but like a musk kind of. I don't like floral at all.
Yeah.
I like earthy.
Elderwood, sandalwood. Like yoga-y. Yeah.
And again, it's still that acceptance vibe, right? It's all the same vibe.
It's all coming together. Wow, we have very similar tastes.
It really does. It's just like your shades, close your eyes and put your shades in purples and smell that earthy scent and accept things. You're on a high, I'm telling you. It's like, it's a vibe.
I'm feeling relaxed. And
my favorite for my own self, though, is called Molecule 01.
Molecule, what's that? Is that a perfume?
It is, yes, it's a unisex perfume that goes with your pheromones, so it smells different on each person that wears it.
Wait, what? I'm looking this up. Molecule 01? I've never heard of this.
I smelled it with somebody at the dog park, and I was like, oh my God, what are you wearing? You smell yummy.
Whoa.
And he said, Molecule 01. And then months later, I smelled on somebody else. I'm like, what are you wearing? She said, Molecule 01. So I finally got it, and when I wear it, people stop me. Like,
really? Are you serious?
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Now I'm buying this. Thank you. Oh my God, it's expensive, Kelly.
It is very expensive. I was going to say,
Jesus,
it's very expensive.
Christ. Somebody sponsor us, please.
It's an experience, man. I'm telling you.
I'm serious. I'm going to have to get like one of those like 3 ounce ones that are like $15. This is $150.
Yeah, it's an experience.
Wow. All right. You've convinced me. I feel like I need to experience this. All right. Almost finals. Favorite holiday?
Lately has been Christmas, and that's because of kids. But
yeah,
Thanksgiving, I host a potluck Thanksgiving every year at my house, which started off small and became really big of people who are from the East Coast like me who just don't fly home for Thanksgiving. And so everybody started bringing stuff. I always make the turkey. Everybody brings everything else. And that's always been like a great time. So that was always my thing. But then my girlfriend and I got together 6 years ago and I have kids. Christmas and literally leaving out cookies for Santa and milk and wrapping stuff at night and putting out while they're asleep and stuff like that. Oh my God, I didn't know that was going to be like so thrilling for me.
Oh, you have to like put on a show. It's like a production now. Yeah, it's like
it
fun.
Really, really is.
Fun
like
again.
We got them bikes last year and we had to go buy bikes, but then put the bikes in the garage so they couldn't see them. So we had to take the bikes out the car and put them away without them noticing that.
Wow.
And then Christmas Eve, bring the bikes in the house to put in front of the tree while they were asleep. Like,
they noticed? Or did you get away with
that? No, they woke up in the morning. I was all super excited. They had bikes and everything. Yeah. So that was
Pretty
fun.
A bike's a
great But prior game. Years, it was always, you know, the dolls and other little games and toys, but wrapping all those things. But yeah, we always put the cookies out, put the milk out. And when they get up the next day, the cookies are gone. It's just crumbs on a plate and the milk is empty. And they look at us.
Yeah, like, so did you enjoy eating these? Favorite outdoor activity?
Again, go back to the bikes. We actually, we bike ride at the beach. We go to Santa Monica and ride. We go to Venice Beach, actually, and then ride to Santa Monica Pier and back. The weather. So if you go to the beach, even if it's like 90 degrees in Silver Lake, it's still like at least 70-ish by the beach, right? So it's just nice. It's pleasant. It's a nice little ride. And we ride down to one end and ride back to the other end. We got exercise and the kids love it. And one time I did go bike riding though, and I'm a name drop real quick, but Mimi Ali, Muhammad Ali's daughter and I are
no
friends.
No big deal. Wow. Jesus.
She likes to ride bikes and she was like, hey, meet me at the beach. Let's go bike riding. I was like, oh, sure. Thinking, yeah, we'll ride a little bit and back and that's it. But I was wrong. It was a very long bike ride. I'm a full figure woman. She's a full figure woman too. And honestly, I underestimated her because I really did think she wasn't as athletic as she is, to be totally honest with you. That was
really?
My fault for making an assumption. I made an assumption.
Ass out
and
of
we
you and
met
me.
At Dockweiler Beach, which is closer like to the airport, which
right.
then goes into, I think from there it was like Seal Beach. What is it? And then
yeah.
I don't know, whatever it was, we ended up at Hermosa or something. Whatever it was freaking far.
That's a far ride.
Like,
that's far. Wait, so then you had to ride back, right?
Yes.
How many miles was it?
We had breakfast at some restaurant, and then And then I was like, oh my God, we have to go back. Yeah, it might have been 10 there and 10 back. It might be like 20, but
it was still more than what I expected.
It was still, I would expect maybe 5 there and 5 back, not 10 there and 10 back.
Yeah.
Damn, it was a long ass ride. Like,
you earned your breakfast that day. Shit.
Oh my God.
Last three. What is your favorite day of the week?
Wednesday.
What? Wait, that is not what I expected. Why?
First of all, I like saying hump day.
Wink, wink. Okay, I like this. I like my, this.
My kids like it when I say it on Wednesday too.
Happy hump day. Like,
but no, it's okay, let me tell you why.
Why? So tell me.
Because when you have kids, the weekends are not what you think.
They are full of
practices and games and
stuff.
We go to track on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. We're there until like 3 in the afternoon. Then last week, it was track on Saturday, and then my other daughter had dance. She had a dance competition against other middle schools on Sunday, all day Sunday. Like, then it's laundry, and the only time, you know, it's chores. Get the car washed. It's stuff that you don't get to do during the week. So really, the weekend is so full, it's not relaxing at all.
So why is Wednesday good? Are you doing like things for yourself?
It's just this middle ground. It is like, they were halfway through the school week, the work week. It's just a middle thing. I just feel balanced in the middle. Huh. I have a little OCD, so maybe that's it.
You just like being
things gotta be balanced.
Hopefully, you get to do things.
We were laughing the other day because I was saying on the car radio when I'm turning the volume, it can't be on an odd number. It has to be like.
I'm the same way.
I go to 10 to 12.
What
is that? I go to 11.
What is that?
I don't know, but 11 sounds odd. Why would I put it on 10 or 12? Why would I put it on 11? Like,
yep. Scares me. What is your favorite kind of gift?
You know, I don't think I have a favorite gift. I'm bad at receiving gifts.
Really?
I'm bad at receiving compliments, all this stuff. I'm bad at that. It makes me feel weird and awkward. But my girlfriend is very good at finding the right theme gifts for me. They're also personal. Like,
right.
She knows I love football, so whatever it is, it'll be a whole football theme. The cake will be a football. My present will be football related. I get a football crossword puzzle. But she did one time with it was a dog theme. And it was a t-shirt about being a dog mom. It was a bracelet with paws on it. Stuff like that. So that's those sentimental things, memory things are pretty cool.
Same.
And those are kind of the same things I like to give, so.
And the last of these questions, what is your favorite thing about yourself?
Oh, God.
Good start.
I'm trying to think.
Nothing. I hate myself. I'm self-loathing.
No. Really, my favorite thing, I want to say that I am still standing, which is really crazy to say, but I'm telling you, man, I feel like there's some things that should have broken me a long time ago, but I'm like, I have to remind myself, I'm like, did you die?
But did you die?
But did you die, though?
Did you die, though?
All right, well, go on.
Then you're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. Yeah, that's really, very resilient. I think you have to be in this.
That's what it is. Yep, that's
miserable resilience. Sometimes.
That is the thing about myself, my resilience, because I really think at this point I should be like, woof.
That's why I need your wisdom. That's why I love you. Like, you're resilient and you're somewhat of a late bloomer and a trailblazer who took a leap of faith to pivot. So
I did.
Let's get into it. Well, let's take me back first to your Philly days. You grew up in Philly. And what did you gravitate towards? What were you getting into? What did you who were you as a kid? What were you doing?
Nobody, nothing.
Nothing?
Nah,
you weren't into anything? You had no interest.
I really was. No, I ran track in high school only because I had long legs and I feel like I should. I was tall. I mean, I'm like 6 feet, so I was probably 5'10" at 14 or something. So I was forced to play basketball, which I hated. Didn't like that, you know. So
your parents forced you?
My mom did. Yeah, she's like put me in basketball camp, all that stuff. Like, no, you're gonna do it, you know.
You weren't
my
into
dad
it.
Was six. Yeah. I think he was 6'3". My dad passed when I was 9, but he was 6'3" or 6'4", something like that, somewhere around there too. So that's what height comes in. My mom's 5'5".
So you got your dad for sure.
Yes.
So,
I'm the tallest of my siblings, all that.
How many siblings do you have?
I have 4 sisters.
Are you, where do you fall in the lineup?
I'm right in the middle.
That's why you like the middle.
Yeah. No, actually, I'm like, well, second to the last, but yeah. 3 older and then a younger, but we're all really spaced apart. I don't know. I have no idea. We're really spaced apart. So it was like weirdly like being grown up as an only child.
Same. My brother's like 8 years-ish older than me. And I felt like an only child. Did you, was that sad? Were you like playing alone a lot?
Or? No, I have a lot of friends and everything. Yeah, hanging with friends. I was just still nerdy. I had a best friend, which we talked about yesterday. My best friend, we met when we were 13 years old, freshman year. And that our ongoing joke is I was talking to somebody else. And happened to say that I lived on Woodbine Avenue, and Carla came over to say, I live on Woodbine Avenue too. And I looked at her like, so? Like, why are you in my conversation?
She talked to me.
Oh. Now when we're 13 years old, I am now godmother of her children. Like, it's like,
we
were
so
best friends. So that's kind of who I hung out with for the most part. We were quiet. I didn't do anything. I graduated at 17, and then I left. And went to Howard University in Washington, D.C.
Yes, you did. What'd you study?
That's where I grew up.
Tell me about those years. What did you study? What was the college year experience like?
Psychology and social work. And
yes. Ding, ding, ding.
Partying.
How was your activity?
Very big cultural shock because I went to a predominantly white, all-girls Catholic school. And then went to a black,
right,
you know, unisex college.
Right. It's an HBC, right?
A HBC, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So definitely a big difference. Like, wow. It was protests. Jesse Jackson was speaking, Nikki Giovanni. There was like, we actually had protests when we shut down the school. Took over the administration building. Yes, because get this. Yes, we were protesting as a black school to make African American studies a required class and not an elective. That was the protest.
Whoa, wait, did it pass? That's ahead of its time. Oh my God.
And because it was an elective.
How was that not required? Either.
Don't know. But guess what is required at Howard University? Now, what? I don't know if it still is now, but it was then.
What?
Swimming. You have to pass swimming in order to graduate.
Why?
Because not a lot of black people know how to swim. And so Howard is determined to break that cycle.
Interesting. So
you have to swim to graduate.
Were you able to swim? I hope. I imagine you passed. Okay. Yes.
Couldn't graduate if I didn't know how to swim. That was the crazy part.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there were some electives that were just, I mean, sports that were just electives and some required. Swimming was a required class.
Oh my God. did the desire to study foster care come from? Like, is there any reason?
It wasn't foster care.
Or social work, sorry.
No, right. I was going to be a pediatrician, so I started off pre-med.
Oh, okay.
And then I failed botany because I missed the midterm. I was late, and the professor locked the door, and it was a 6-credit class, just plummeted my whole GPA.
Oh, my God. Wait, so it was because of that you completely
and
changed?
And I was like, fuck this. Yeah. I can't. So then I said I was going to be a child psychiatrist, because I still wanted to work with children. And so I wasn't going to be a pediatrician. I'd be a child psychiatrist. But then that still required medical school, whatever. And I was like, all right, what do I do to be a psychologist? Then it was like, all right, be a child psychologist, but you got to graduate, but you got to take the GRE to go to, you know, grad school. This and that. I'm like, oh my God, what can I do? I don't have to do all that. And then a social worker. I just kept narrowing it down. Because I was like, I do not want to be in school for another 50 years. I'm not taking no more entry exams. Nothing.
No more debt.
That is it.
That I'm still in. Yeah.
Whoa. So became a social worker. Was a social worker probably all of, I don't even know, 5 years, if that. And then became a writer. I've been doing it ever since.
No. We're not going to skip ahead that fast. We have to get into your social work. Like, you were in the foster care system, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about that experience. Was it everything you hoped? Was it fulfilling?
No,
was it not?
That was a very sad, sad, sad job.
I can imagine.
Yeah, my job was to remove kids from abusive homes. And so what's crazy is, the child could really, really be getting abused by their parent, their mother. They could be starving, have no food, no clothes, be dirty, the whole nine. When you go to take them out, they kick and scream, because regardless of all the negativity, that's their life and that's all they know. And taking them from their parent is so traumatizing. Like, It was one of the hardest jobs I've ever had in my life. And I was like, oh my God, like, oh, I'm thinking I'm going in, I'm going to take this child out and I'm going to put them in a beautiful foster home and they're going to grow up and they're going to be so happy.
Right.
But no, that's not really how it works. It's not that, like, for them mentally, it is being pulled from their family and put with strangers. That's how they see it. And even though it was abusive, that was my life. And now you're going to, and you know, I had that experience years later because I became a foster mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that experience with my foster son. He really believed he did not deserve to be happy. It was just that he abandoned his mom. Like, he should have stayed with his biological mom despite the sadness.
My heart.
And he's had like a survivor's remorse. It was like a guilt of like, she's someplace now doing whatever, and I am living this happy lifestyle. Like, it was a weird thing. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, that led me from there with the kids. I became the director of a homeless shelter.
Oh.
Which was just as sad because it was a 28 unit apartment building that they turned into a shelter. So basically 27 of those apartments were occupied by women with children. No men were allowed there. And the women that qualified to get in, you basically were basically homeless. You had no place to go with your children. The 28th apartment was what we turned into the offices. Like, literally, it was a 3-bedroom apartment, but the living room area was like the reception area, and each of the 3 bedrooms were offices. Like, that's how the building was designed.
Wow.
That's where I worked.
Wow.
And that felt like being a landlord. I had keys to all 28 units. Like,
oh my gosh.
And yes, and the parents were using drugs, and they'll go out at 2 a.m. and leave their kids alone while they're out. And I would get a phone call in the middle of the night, you know, because somebody's complaining. They could just hear a kid crying, but I'm the only one that got keys and have to go get up, go let myself in the apartment to find the child there by themselves
because
the parent went out to go get high or something like that.
God.
And then you have to start the process because that's against the rules. So they have to be evicted the next day. So you literally are putting a parent and their children right back onto the street.
Jesus.
It just felt bad for the kids because they didn't ask for that shit, you know?
Could you take them out of the parent's supervision at that point? No,
that wasn't my job then. My job was just to report that the parent had basically used drugs, violated the, you know, the facility's rules and had to be evicted immediately.
Wow.
Now, what happened to them after that was whatever, you know, I don't know if the city stepped in and takes the children or whatever else, but I just had to, because then we had to open up that space then for somebody who wasn't using drugs and not leaving their children alone who needed a place to stay. You know, you had to keep it. Both jobs were extremely sad.
That was 5 to 10 years, you said? You did that for?
I didn't even know if it was even that long, honestly, from graduation to, somewhere around there. Yeah, probably about 10, because I moved to LA at 32. So if I did that straight out of college, that's 10 years, probably 22 to 32.
What made you want to go to LA? I mean, besides the misery of what you were dealing with, what made you decide LA is the move and why?
Actually didn't. It was a dare.
Someone dared you? What?
My roommate. Yes.
Are you serious? Kelly.
So the New York Film Academy had an 8-week workshop for film production. And I was a person who you probably would hate to go to movies with because I dissected everything that was not all the things that were like continuity issues.
Right.
I'm like, oh my gosh, she was holding that soda can in her right hand. Like, you know, what I noticed things. She was, you know, oh, 1 minute. Here's a funny thing. I noticed, if you watch Pretty Woman right now,
yeah,
is a scene in the hotel with, Julia Roberts. She's eating a pancake and then it cuts away and it comes back. She's eating a waffle.
Oh,
no one notices that. No, no.
What? And you noticed?
I noticed that. I noticed.
Wow.
That.
You should have been a scripty.
So my roommate was like, "Oh my God, you should go out there and you should take this class and whatever, whatever." And that was really at that point getting sad of this whole social work stuff. And I have never done film or television in my life, but I did love movies. And it was an 8-week class, and I was like, "All right, maybe I should." And the class was at Universal Studios, so I was like, "I'm going to go out there and I'm going to take this 8-week class and see what happens." And that's how I came out here.
What? And then, you just moved out here, or you were just doing the 8 weeks and then you were like,
I came out of here because a friend of a friend somebody who lived in Long Beach. And I said, I'm going to rent a room from them, which I did. And then, I can't remember. I took the course, which I really loved. I was going to be a director. Then my sister came to visit me. This is such a weird story.
Love it.
My oldest sister came to visit me. And we were walking around Hollywood sightseeing. It might have been Venice Beach, actually, sightseeing. And they were handing out, this is how they used to do back in the day. They hand out tickets for people to invite you to be in the studio audience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we were invited to be in the audience of a show taping, which was the Parkers. And so we went to the show that night and watched the live taping of the Parkers. And I was like, wow, this is cool.
Whoa.
Like asking the people who seat you, I'm like, how do I get a job like this? Or whatever.
Right.
It was really one of those things. And they were like, oh, well, you know, you can send us your resume and blah, blah, blah. And then I saw a lady who worked on the Parkers who was down on this floor, like, you know, for the show. She actually came up to the audience and sat. And I tapped her. I'm like, weren't you just down there? She's like, yeah. And so she worked on the show. She goes, yes. But she was sneaking away. She was trying to, like, just sneak away. So she went and sat up in the audience to, like, take a break or whatever. Oh, and I was like, are you guys hiring? And so she was like, no, but if you want, you can send your resume. And that night, I sent my resume to both places, to the Parkers and to the people, to the audience seating. And the audience seating people called. They offered me a job. But it was like $8 an hour. And the first day was no pay. And you have to wear khaki pants and a white shirt.
Oh, my God.
Which meant I had to go to the Gap and go buy stuff. So I said, no, thank you. And I hung up. And a friend of mine said, no, call him back. Take the job. I was like, coming off of being a D.C. government employee.
Literally.
I am not making $8 an hour.
Wow.
I have a master's degree. Fuck that.
Oh, my God.
But her advice was to call them back because just like I met the lady when I was sitting in the audience that worked on the show, she's like, you'll be in the building. You'll seat the people watching the show, but you'll be in the building. So I called back. And I was like, okay. Can I take the job? Lady's like, yes. So I went and got the damn khaki pants and the white shirt. I really did. I started on a Tuesday, and because I was a new person, there was like 9 other, they call them audience pages, but basically they're ushers.
Right.
There was 9, like 9 other ushers, and I had to go and fix everybody's dinner because there's a catering that happens right before the show starts for the cast and the crew. Ushers get to eat that too, but you're busy seating everybody in the audience for the show. So somebody has to go make all the plates of food first so that once the show is started, then all the ushers can go eat.
I see.
So my job was to go make all these plates of food that was my first day. And I ran into the lady that was sneaking that sat in the audience the last time I was there. She said, hey. And I was like, hey. And I'm like, oh, I'm working over here now, blah, blah, blah. I said, do you guys never call me back? She said, we didn't have anything, but you know, if you want to send your resume again, you can. I'm like, okay. And that night I sent my resume again and someone had gotten fired the next day. And so she called me.
Stop.
And I wound up getting hired as a receptionist on the Parker. So I had the usher job one day, that Tuesday when I made the plates.
Oh my God. Stop it. Wait, that's
and then
crazy.
That Thursday, I was at the Parkers as a receptionist answering the phones, which was more money than the usher job, obviously. And now I'm actually on a show, but I was answering phones. So my mom, of course, is pissed because,
right,
again, master's degree. Why are you answering phones?
Right.
And I'm like, well, this is totally new for me. So I had to start at the bottom. I mean, this is not social work. So,
right,
you know, so I'm answering phones, which I did for the whole remaining that season, because the middle of their second season.
Yeah.
So I did that for the remaining of the entire second season. And then after that, the show ends and no one tells you what happens after that because there's 3 or 4 months of just the show is over.
Yeah, you're just like, waiting. Yeah.
Oh my God, I got no job again. What the hell just happened?
Yeah. Oh, and, brutal.
But then I got the phone call. They got picked up for 3rd season. I'm like, oh wow. So I'm going to go back. But when I went back, a writer's assistant didn't return. They asked me, did I want to be a writer's assistant?
So you just fell into this? Kelly, that's insane.
That's exactly what happened.
Oh, so, my God.
I was a writer's assistant for, I think, season 3 and season 4. And then in season 5, we found out that the show was going to be canceled. But our showrunner and creator was told at the beginning of the season, so it wasn't a surprise. So she was able to decide, you know, how she wanted to wrap things up. They didn't just cancel and you just didn't come back and the show just ended in like a cliffhanger.
Right.
So she was able to write the whole 5th season the way she wanted to close it out. And her being the wonderful woman that she is, gave all the assistants an episode. So that's how I got my first freelance episode.
Oh my God, that is a dream.
Each of us wrote an episode of the 5th season.
What? Kelly, that's unheard of. This whole story, by the way, would never happen today. It's not a thing that happens today.
Well, here's sad. One of the main reasons why it won't happen today is not that it won't be nice people like that again.
Right.
Is that there's no longer 22 episode seasons. It's just 10.
Exactly.
So when you only got 10 seasons, you don't even have the luxury of giving assistants a script because it's just enough for the writers you have. Like,
so you had your first episode. Where do you go from there?
Well, because that show was ending and it got canceled. And then I wound up typing, which is another crazy story. A writer from that show, from the Parkers, wound up selling their own show and asked me to help them type the pilot. So I'm still doing like my writer's assistant kind of job duties, but it was just really just me and her and like another exec, nobody else, because the show was, it was just the pilot at that moment. And then it got picked up. So I was hired as at this point, the script coordinator, because the script coordinator and writer's assistant are the same position, but the script coordinator is the boss of the writer's assistants basically.
Right.
So it just has a different title, but it's still a writer's assistant. So I became that for that show once it got picked up. When I typed, and then I typed Reba McEntire had a sitcom called Reba back then.
Oh my God, wait, you're on that?
And Reno 911. And there was another one. I typed all the pilots. I didn't work on the shows. I just got hired because I type really fast.
Oh my God.
I had long fingers. Like, it was like when I was growing up, I was told to be a pianist. Like, it was like I have really long fingers. So rumor somehow, it was a weird rumor, but rumor got around. If Kelly types your pilot, the show would get picked up. Because every pilot I type, the show got picked up. Which has nothing to do with me. But it became a weird thing. And that was my run, I swear, for like a couple of years of being this person who got paid to type, the show would get picked up, and then that was my job at that moment.
God.
And it kind of worked out. But that ended with Jamie Foxx. He did a presentation for FX, and I typed, it didn't get picked up. But first of all, they called it a presentation, not a pilot, for FX, which was like just starting out. My good streak ended there.
Oh my God. So you were no longer, you were out of a job. They were like, nope. Can't hire her.
Yep.
No.
That was that. You're like, boo.
Wait, now what?
I think I joined the fifth season of, there was a show called 101 that wound up being a spinoff. It had a spinoff called Cuts. It was a barbershop show. But 101 was with Flex Alexander and Kyla Pratt.
Ooh.
And I got hired in the fifth season of that to, again, still be a script coordinator and writer's assistant, basically, and type in that fifth season. But it was in the fifth season. I think it only went on for like a sixth season or something, if that. It didn't last long. I came on that show in the end. Mm. All the other shows, you start off with the pilot and the show runs for five seasons, you get a good run, you know? But you start on the show in the middle of it, and they might have like a season or two left in them, and that's it. You're back out again. So.
Oh, no. So you were
so
out.
That one ended, and I think, I want to say, then I went to Hawaii, which is, I had a friend who was in film, and I was depressed. I was like, oh my God, like these jobs were, coming and going. When they're great, when it's bad, but I was coming and going, like, you work for 4 months, you off work for 2 months, you all work for four, and it was starting to wear on me.
Yeah.
And I was like, if you have anything, let me know. I just got to get out the house now, blah, blah. And she's like, well, I'm going to Hawaii next week if you want to come. I'm like, wait, what? Yeah, she was like, I could use a UPM. Unit production manager.
Yeah, how would you, have you ever done that?
Never done that in my life. She was like, look, I got nobody. You want to go? Let me know. I'm like, wait, what about my mail? What about this? Like, how long are you going to be there? It was like for 3 months. I'm like, I can't go to Hawaii for 3 months.
What the hell?
Yeah. And everybody was like, Kelly, if you don't fucking get on the plane, somebody can get your mail. I had no kids, no pets. Like, why wouldn't you not go? Like, it was, my brain was not like, oh my God, I supposed to just leave and go to Hawaii for 3 months and just live there? Like, what?
That's crazy still. Like, you've never done the job either. That's crazy.
Yep. And I did. So I went and I literally lived there for 3 months on a beach. We had a big house on the beach. I had a jacuzzi in my room. Like, it was this big ass mansion that production rented for all of us from LA to stay there. So me, my friend that hired me, the accountant, the first AD, like, we all had rooms in this big house. We had our production meetings at the dining room table. Like, we had a copy machine. All, like, it was like the house was turned into like a production facility, but we all like slept there, and we shot on the beach for 3 months. It was this Here network. It's a gay and lesbian network now. You had to pay for it too. It was like, it wasn't a free, it was a premium channel. Dante's Cove. It was
Dante's
this
Cove.
Yeah, you Google it. It was this old vampire dude that had to like suck the blood of these young boys to stay youthful or some shit. It was so crazy. It was some cheesy weird shit.
I'm watching this. I'm still caught up on the fact that you've never done that job. How the hell did you do this?
No, my friend, she who's no longer in the business now at herself.
She's smart.
She was a producer and she just told me what to do. Like, for instance, I had to order rain. It was a rainstorm.
What?
And she said, order rain. I'm like, what the fuck? Call this number and tell them you want a storm. Just answer their questions. I'm like, okay. And I called. I'm like, no, this is how I learned on the job. And to this day, now I can be a UPM. But it was the craziest training. It was like on-the-job training. Like,
that's crazy.
So we're on set. I'm looking. And I kept thinking, oh, my God, I ordered that. Like, I ordered
rain. You ordered rain.
Like,
you were God for a day. Damn.
So
what a dream.
Crazy.
What a fucking dream, Kelly.
So
holy
between that and just learning how to, you know, you had to order the, you know, the wagons and the dressing rooms and walkie-talkies. And then when you check the walkie-talkies out, you assign to each department head. And at the end of the shoot, make sure each department head returns them. That was my job. That's what a unit production manager does.
Wow. So that's one advice, is just learn on the job if you get the chance.
Yep. Just went out there and learned it. And I got paid to be in Hawaii. Like, what the hell? God. Who knew?
So what comes next? When do you get back? Did you get back on a show? Are you writing again? What's going on?
When I came back after that, I think that's when I sold my show. When I worked with Tyler Perry. That's when I worked with Tyler Perry, I think. I came back
after
that.
Where did that come into play? How did that happen?
Oh, so back on One-on-One, when I was working, I told you I went in that fifth season, I had gotten a phone call from a man named Ruben Cannon, who is a producer now, but he was actually a casting director. He's a casting director on the original Color Purple, like way back in the day.
Oh, wow.
He became a producer. He called and said, Tyler Perry wants to do a TV show and was looking for writers, and my name came up. The person who had given him my name was one of the people I had typed for, one of those pilots.
Oh, my God.
Years prior, which is so crazy. But anyway.
Wow.
I was like, okay, so what do you need? Usually in this industry, you turn in a spec script, which, you know, was like, you know, a script of a show, right? So I had a Sex and the City script. I think I had a Seinfeld script. I think I had a Bernie Mac script. They were like, no. Tyler needs to read what Tyler knows, which is Tyler stuff. How does that mean? So Blockbuster still existed. I went to Blockbuster, rented all of Tyler Perry's plays, which were on DVD. And then I wrote a script based off the way one of the plays ended. I did like a continuation from the end of the play, and like what would happen next kind of. So Meet the Browns ends with a funeral. I started my script with the reading of the will and kind of went from there and sent that to Tyler Perry, and it went on with my life. And then I think when I got back from Hawaii somewhere, that's when I got the call. And he basically said, you captured my voice. That was his exact words. You captured my voice. And he was like, let's meet. And I wound up meeting him at a editing bay on Cahuenga Boulevard. He was there. He was in town. He lives in Atlanta, but he was here in LA. He was editing Diary of a Mad Black Woman. And so I met him at the editing. And this dude is massive. I walked in. When he walked into the room, I'm told you, I'm tall, but he's like 6'5".
Jesus.
But he's solid. It's like a wall.
Whoa.
His shoulders, his head, his hands. Like seriously, he's huge.
Damn.
He doesn't appear that way just when you watch on TV, but in person, you're like, oh my God.
I had no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah, he's a huge ass dude. And he walked in and he hugged me and he said, people don't like us. And I'm like, what? And he was like, you and me, we didn't go to school for this and we're good at it and people don't like us. That's what he said. And I'm like, what?
Oh my God.
So needless to say, though, that turned into a whole nother thing because he actually wasn't the person I thought he was. That's a whole nother podcast.
No, but I want to know now. Crap.
No, that would take
all
a whole nother thing. But I wound up flying to Atlanta and I ran his show for 126 episodes. And then we ended up bumping heads towards the end of all of that because we didn't have health insurance and he would refuse to join the Writers Guild. And he didn't want to become signatory. And it was, which all the things he had said he was going to do when I took the job. Because mind you, I was already in the union. Like I had that, you know, and everything. So like for me to just take this job, he promised he was going to become signatory. He had promised proper participation points. Like, you know, we were talking about residuals, all these things. And, you know, 100 126 episodes later, still had none of that, including health insurance. Never got health insurance.
Yeah.
When I mentioned wanting health insurance, I was told to use my per diem, which is not what per diem is for. Yeah, because I was living in Atlanta. So I got per diem because I was there. You know, I live in LA, but I was there in Atlanta working with them. So I got per diem all the time.
I'm like,
that's for my meals and stuff, but not health insurance. Yep.
Brutal.
So, like I said, we fought. That was September 2008. We never spoke again.
Wow.
Oh no, I take that back. We ran into each other in 2014 at the Image Awards.
And how was that reunion?
Well, no, I tapped on his shoulder. He turned around, looked shocked. And I was like, hey. And I said, we haven't spoken since September 2008.
What did he say?
Really? It's been that long? I was like, yes. And then he was like, well, call Ozzy. That was his assistant at the time. Let's set something up. Called Ozzy, emailed Ozzy, text Ozzy, everything. I never got a call back. And so that was it. We never spoke again.
Oh, my God.
Karma's going to get him in down the road at some point. Trust
I
and believe.
I hope that's the case for all these assholes in Hollywood.
Trust and
I
believe.
I really, really hope so.
Me and the writers and the people that I brought on board, we made his show. It came out shitty in the end because he decided he never directed before in his life. He's going to direct all 100 something episodes and edit and this and the other. And he didn't understand the setup and payoff for jokes or anything like that because he did stage plays, you know? And
right.
Well, then again, I mean, there's still setup and payoffs, even a stage play, but he didn't know that. And so in editing, he would cut things. So at the end, certain things didn't make sense because he cut it earlier. And so by the time the show aired, House of Pain, I'm talking about, it really was not like a well-written show. Like that's how it came off. But it was well-written up until that point.
Wow.
It was killed in editing. Like, it's just, oh, God. It's just,
oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it got
brutal.
To the point where I had to take it off my resume because it was hurting me. It wasn't helping me.
Oh, no. I would think that would have helped you, but yeah, I guess.
No, to basically say, like, I basically was the showrunner for a show for 126 episodes, but nope.
You don't
because
say which one.
The 126 episodes were sucky, so it made it look like I was sucky.
Not your fault, his fault.
Yeah, wasn't my fault. We had some really, really great writers in that writer's room, seriously.
Oh. Was that when you found Fuller House or they found you from that?
No. So I sold my show after that. So I came back after my time with Tyler and I had a year. Basically, I took a break.
Yeah.
Which right. at the time I didn't know was... I probably shouldn't have. I didn't know, like you just said, you would think coming off 127 episodes running room that I have no problem getting another job.
Right.
I was banking on that and did not realize that was not going to be the case and that his name did not mean shit.
Ugh.
And so I took a break because we shot 3 episodes a week and I was exhausted and we did those 126 episodes. We did 100 episodes in 11 months.
Oh my God.
But it takes 5 seasons for a regular show to do 100 episodes. We did it in 11 months. We shot 100 episodes.
That's abuse. That's like, I can't imagine.
With no health insurance and like whatever. So I was extremely tired and exhausted. And once we parted ways that September 2008, I was like, I'm going to take a break. And then, we wound up having to fight him for like basically how he did not end things even personally with himself. Ruben Cannon, the same guy from years prior that called me to hire me, him and another guy were on a freaking group call and fired me and all the writing staff over the phone.
Wow.
And that's how things ended with him. He wasn't even on the call.
Oh, he wasn't even on the call.
Like, what? Come on, dude.
That's just, my God, Kelly, my taste in my mouth.
Woo. Yeah, it's just like, ugh. So anyway, so after all of that, we had to do the Writers Guild, got involved and blah, 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 because I think they got him on good faith negotiations because verbal agreements are the same as written agreements. And he did say that he was going to join. He was going to get the proper participation points. He said these things and then tried to change his mind later. And they basically got him on that. So we all got nice severance packages. So that allowed me to say that I was going to take a year and just chill the fuck out.
Like, good. You needed
it. I was so exhausted. But then when I tried to come back, it wasn't working. And it was like, oh, but I have 126 episodes. I ran a room. I did this. And they're like, nope, nope, nope. Like, Tyler Perry shit sucks, girl. No. Like,
oh, no. So all that for nothing.
So I had to prove myself and write. And so I found out that BET was doing, they wanted to do a show like the Bob Newhart show, who was a psychologist, but with a black female. Hulu had just come out pretty much around that time. And Hulu had all 6 seasons of the Bob Newhart show. So I watched, I think, the first 2 seasons on a Friday night. Saturday, I wrote a script.
Oh my God.
Sunday, I proofed the script. Monday, I emailed the script.
Whoa.
And then my phone rang, and I never forget, she said, wait a minute, did you just send me a script? And I was like, yeah. She goes, okay, we told you we want to do a show along the lines of Bob Newhart. I said, yep. And she goes, all right, so I was just going to send some ideas. I was like, yeah, I just feel like writing a script. So I wrote the script.
Oh my God.
Because I'm coming off of a show, which was the upside of Tyler Perry. We shot 3 episodes a week. So my brain moves faster than the average person when it comes
That's
to writing.
That's impressive. Wow.
So that was watch on Friday, write on Saturday, proof on Sunday, email on Monday.
I can't believe that.
That Thursday, business affairs called, and they bought the show. That's how I sold my show.
That's unheard of now, I feel like. That's very rare.
It would not happen like that now, no. And Whoa. Here's the crazy part. Rereading that same script, I could not have even sold that script today.
Really?
Because, yeah, I think back then, if you look at the Parkers and all stuff like that, the humor was different. It was funny. We loved all that stuff. But it wasn't as sharp and as witty now. Like, now, like, shows that are being told are comedies, really are dramedies. Like, there's not that. Nobody's doing a pie in the face. We're not doing that kind of humor anymore. A guy gets kicked in the nuts. That kind of stuff. Like that. It is, somebody could be depressed and the friend comes over like, girl, get out this bag because we're going to do blah, blah. And they'll find a way to make it funny. But it's about real, life shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Couldn't have sold that same script now, but then it worked. And at the same time, BT was just getting into scripted because they had, at that point they weren't. So when you get on the ground floor, again, with those pilots, like I said, I was able to have some longevity. You get on the ground floor, it works out. Getting coming in the show, 3rd, 4th season is totally different. So.
Wow.
So I couldn't have the stuff I'm telling you now would not happen today. Not
That's
even close.
Crazy. And you would never want to be a writer. This is also crazy to me.
I don't want it
and
to
you
direct
all these jobs out on the way. Wow. So you sold that show and then does Fuller House come or
So that lasted for 2 seasons. They did weirdly 25 episodes the first season and then 8 the second season. So
what
weird.
What the hell? That's like today.
So weird.
Wow.
Yeah. And Tracy Ellis Ross left the first season, those 25 episodes she was on, but then those 8. The second season, without me involved and without Tracy on it, it was just Malcolm Jamal Warner raising the kids. Mm. And it was very weird because, I don't know if you know Malcolm Jamal Warner, while he's a very lovely man, he is more Desi than he is Lucy. And so
I see.
Lucy can always do a show without Desi Arnaz. Desi cannot do a show without Lucy. Like, it would be boring as hell to watch. You watch it for Lucy.
Exactly.
And so that's what it was. So once Tracy left and it was just Malcolm, it didn't have the same thing and it got canceled. So that was it. So then I was like, okay. And that is going to sound crazy coming from me, what I'm about to say, but I was like, enough with the black people. At that point, I had worked on The Parkers and Cuts and, I mean, 101 and did all my stuff. I told you, Jamie Foxx and everybody. Like
you were done with the black people.
Tyler Perry. I sold a show to BET. I was like, okay. So I set a goal and I was like, I have to get on a mainstream show. I have to get on a broadcast network. I need a change. And that was my goal. And I told my manager, like, we got to make something happen. Don't even tell me about this black person who has a show.
Wow.
I want to go over here for a minute and just see what's like. You're like, because this is crazy.
Wow.
And so, and I've never been staffed on a show, which is the weird part. Mind you.
I was going to say, I haven't seen you be a staff in a
show. I was a writer's assistant.
Yep.
And then I went and I was Tyler Perry's head writer. And then I sold my own show. I was never just a writer on a show.
You missed the writer's room ladder. It's crazy.
Exactly. Right. So it's like I went from high school to grad school.
Literally. That's
and
crazy.
And I skipped college in between. And so
crazy.
I landed a job on an NBC show, which finally I'm like, oh my God, this is what college feels like.
Wow.
And so I finally get to sit at the table and pitch ideas as part of a show, but not be the person who has to decide on what works and what doesn't work. Go approve wardrobe. Go do this. Go do like,
right.
I got to just come in, work, and then go home. Like,
that's a beautiful thing. That's
so it was so
relief. Different.
I was like, oh my God. Because either I was the person typing everything or I was the person in charge of everything.
Not
I didn't
in
get to
between.
Just come in like, yeah.
Wow.
So NBC show called Crowded. that was my show that I finally got my college experience, and I really enjoyed. And unfortunately, it got canceled after 12 episodes. So
I need to ask before that we go into anything else. Like, did you find DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, was that an issue? Did you have barriers going into the white world?
Yes, being the only person of color, not just Black, no, Asian, Latino, whatever. Like, it was very difficult both on Crowded and on Fuller House because I pretty much ended up being the race police, I would say. Because there's always some, and it's also a comedy room, and comedy room can get a little raw and raunchy.
Right.
And you got to have thick skin to be in a comedy writer's room sometimes, you know?
100%.
And I don't mind some male, female, sexist type jokes, stuff like that. But there are certain race jokes you just can't say and do. And I remember being on Fuller House, and we were actually going to Japan, like the show. Like, there was actually going to be 2 episodes shot in Japan. And leading up to that, in this script, there were so many racist Asian jokes in that writer's room. And all I kept thinking, if this show was going to Africa and I wasn't in the room, what would they be saying? Like, it's like they were like really going in. So I kind of had to be this person to speak up and go, you can't say that. Like,
wow.
You know, and then that made me like the enemy, because then I was the joke killer, and like people got mad because I was like, I'm telling you, I was the race police.
And what year was this? Because this is right after Crowded. You got in Fuller House.
2015 was Crowded. 2017 was Fuller House.
Okay, so they passed you on, but then they're still doing that. The racial reckoning didn't happen until a few years later, but that's still crazy that they was still happening. Tell me more about the room and the experience. Was it overall positive, or was it you were just enemy number one because you were the only person of color?
I became enemy number one, but for different reasons on both shows. I can't tell you about Crowded. I can tell you that off the air. but Crowded, I can tell you, I mean, with Fuller House, I can tell you one of the main things was there was 7 co-EPs. I was one of them.
Whoa.
It was a top heavy show. It was literally 7 co-EPs.
Oh my God.
The one co-EP was Jeff Franklin, whose show it was. Somehow he had it. Well, and his producing partners who weren't part of the show, but from who were producers by name because they carried over from Full House to Full House.
Right.
I never met them a day in my life. So when the credits rolled, there's like 3 EP names, but everybody else was a co-EP because I think he had some type of deal in his contract that nobody else could be an EP but him. Something weird. So you had this show with 7 co-EPs. 3 of us had sold our own shows previously, you know what I'm saying, before. So it was this top-heavy show with some really over-experienced people who had no room for growth because we could never be an EP on the show. It was just a very weird thing. Just a weird thing. And so one of my colleagues actually died that season, which was another thing. So it was a weird time. And then Jeff and the sexual misconduct. Yes and no. Because his wasn't sexual harassment. It was misconduct because he's a braggy older man who dated younger women who probably shouldn't come back and just talking about shit all the time. It wasn't nothing that happened with any of the staff on the show. It was just inappropriate conversations. So that's why he got misconduct, not harassment or anything. Like, he got sexual misconduct. In any case, he was let go, and so was the whole 3rd season staff. So we all went with him.
Oh, well, you all left. You all had to leave because of him.
Because the new showrunners they wanted to bring in their own people, and you also don't know who on the staff were loyal to him. You know, so they cleaned house. So that's pretty much how it went down.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then, so that was the most recent. I mean, what's been the latest since then? What have you been venturing into?
I sold a show to Disney. You were still, I think, there at this point.
I was at Disney. That's,
in 2019.
Yes.
Show. That's what I was dealing with, Jonas and Corey and...
Yes.
Raphael and Maria. They were all, that was my little team of people. I didn't get picked up. We never even shot the pilot, but I made a lot of money in development. So, hey.
Boom.
And they didn't go forward with it. You know, that was that. And then, right, that was 2019. And then the pandemic hit. And then that was everything.
Yeah. And now we're in just like a wasteland.
We're in the post pandemic, post strike phase right now.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of animation under my belt now because that was the only thing standing during the pandemic because animation does not require anybody to ever be in the same room. Like,
that's
ever.
Crazy to me. Do you love that?
It is very
COVID
friendly. I loved it at the time, but now I'm like, okay, guys, no.
Yeah.
But it's so COVID friendly.
Wow.
So I write from home, and people can do their voiceovers from home, and animators can draw from home. We just Zoom all the time. No one ever has to be in the same room. So.
Wow. That's kind of
a
dream.
Farmer's World on Netflix, Rubble and Crew on Nickelodeon, A Loud House on Nickelodeon, Vita the Vet, which is a Spin Master show, but it's on YouTube.
Do you like animation better than live action?
No, because I miss people. So
you miss people.
Yeah, animation, yeah. First of all, is not covered by the Writers Guild.
Yeah.
It pays a quarter of what I'm used to making. Cool. They do not have deadlines they need to follow. So I'm still waiting on notes right now. Like literally today, I'm waiting on notes from something I turned in 3 weeks ago. I haven't heard a word.
God,
Colin. Haven't heard a word. And you can't get paid until you move to the next phase. So I got to wait for notes. So then I can do my invoice and then move on to the outline and then you do your invoice and then move on to the script. But they take months in between. Like,
I mean, live action does too, I guess.
Not like this. So
this is a whole different
but
world.
I am going back to live action. And again, I can talk to you off air.
Yeah.
But I am working with a certain someone again. And we were pitching again, hopefully in like about 2 weeks. So.
Oh my God. See, that's great. Okay, so resilience is paying off. You're kind of getting back into it. It seems like you've had a lot of ups and downs, but like, what, I guess, what advice do you have about...
I told you, acceptance. What did I do?
Resilience? I mean, just in terms of writing or in life, like pivoting and, I mean, because you never had writing in your sights and then you just found
Right, yeah. And I had writing in my sights. I wanted to be a director, but writing kept coming to me. So I was like, all right, just roll with it.
Wow.
And I just rolled with it. Animation would never have been on my list, but it came to me. So I just rolled with it. But what's crazy is the animation thing, I'm glad I rolled with it because I, out of all of my colleagues, was like, actually, I mean, like I just told you, I'm waiting on notes now. Most of my colleagues are not working. I'm still, even though animation pays lower,
right.
I'm still working though. I never stopped working. It's just different things.
This industry is at 25% capacity right now, I've heard the other day.
It really is. It's
75% of us that are not working. So you're one of the lucky ones. And that's
It is a very slow process. I'm waiting on notes from 3 weeks ago and I don't get paid in between. So I'm just sitting around waiting. But
at least
I'm getting notes. I got a lot of colleagues who, you know, wish they were getting notes on something. Like,
right. I mean, me.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Or getting emails answered. So that's a testament to you and your work ethic. And like, you just went with it. So is that your advice to like wannabe writers or industry folks is just like say yes to every opportunity, be resilient. What do you have? Advice?
Yeah, just keep an open mind. If you listen to my whole entire story, seriously, being the usher for the 8,000 hour, I was not going to do it, but somebody said, no, go back and do it. So you got to keep an open mind. Cause that led me to run into that lady again, which led me to the Parkers, right?
Oh,
all of a sudden I'm typing for people. Like, I don't want to do this. I want to be a director. Nope. I just kept rolling with it. Next thing you know, I'm selling my own show. Like, none of that was supposed to be what I thought I was doing at all.
Crazy.
But I didn't fight it. I stayed open to everything. Like, all right, just keep an open mind. So like animation, I'm like, oh, okay, sure. I am now in animation. You have to write a song all the time.
Yeah.
I am now part of the, what is it? ASCAP? I had to join the music.
You're in it? Oh, that's
yes.
So funny.
Because I got to write lyrics about brushing your teeth.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh
yes.
My God. Who knew that would be part of your resume? And now
exactly.
You're in every facet.
I used to put in the script like, all right, insert song here about brushing teeth. So I thought they were doing it like, no, you write some stuff. I'm like, I gotta write it. Yeah, we can tweak it, but just make stuff rhyme. And so I'm like, okay.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
So that is what I'm doing now. I'm making rhyming songs about kids and going to getting checkups and stuff.
But what's your pie in the sky like dream for yourself down the line? Like, what do you want to be doing?
I am currently working on my story about my family right now, and mainly from the voice of my 14-year-old.
Right,
and it's basically awkward. It's awkward meets atypical, basically.
Oh,
her entering high school and, you know, what that's like. And she's has high functioning autism and ADHD and stuff like that, which unlike atypical, where you can tell the kid had autism, you would never in a million years know that my kid did. Like, you wouldn't. Wow. But I know. And we had her tested. And we're like, oh, but straight A student, like genius level, right? But at the same time, might ask you some stuff that's like so basic and obvious. You're like, how do you not know this? You know?
Right.
So it all that comes in. But she, based on that, she makes some very poor choices with her friends and behaviors because she doesn't see consequences the way a, like what they call neurotypical person sees things. She's what's called neurodivergent. And so her brain is different. You and I will literally see a fire and have one reaction. She'll see a fire and might have a reaction. You'd be like, why is she doing that? Like, her brain just obviously operates differently. And so there's some humor in it because my family is like so crazy. And it's just like, her being part of all of that is just an adventure every day in my household.
And does she know you're writing about her? Is she helping you write it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we talk about it as a family, and it's told in her voice. And so she just, you know, I have actual stories in it that have actually happened that no one would probably believe. Like, this would not happen. Nope, actually happened. So that is my story that I hope to get done. One, because it's very therapeutic for me. Two, I would love for any other parent out there that has a neurodivergent child to see it and go, oh my God, yes.
Right.
Because there's things, there's things that she has done and said that you go, why?
That's my what the fuck. Now I need to know.
That what the fuck.
Now I want to know.
The actual fuck. I was going to name it what the fuck.
Oh my God, I want to know what it is.
I can't really describe. I don't know, I have to tell you off air. I'll tell you off air, but it's just stuff. But there's a lot of what the fucks. A lot of what the fucks.
You should call it what the fuck.
I was gonna say what the fuck. It was gonna, right now it's just untitled, but it's what the fuck. Then we read the room is another phrase we say a lot. We say that a lot.
Wait, that's a good name for a show.
Yeah, I was gonna say that because she, you literally can say that your grandmother passed away. And you could be crying. And she might come over and she might rub your back and go, oh, I'm so sorry to hear about your grandmother. Hey, can we get some ice cream? What the fuck?
Oh, my God.
When you read the room, you should not be asking about ice cream at this moment.
Oh, my gosh. So how is that? I mean, how has parenting been? Like, you have 14 and 12-year-old, right?
Yeah.
You're a stepmom, right?
Yeah, we call it bonus mom.
Bonus mom. And do they, I mean, has that been something you ever thought you would be? Have you enjoyed parenting? Have you?
It has its ups and downs and a lot of what the fuck moments, but yes.
Yeah. Wow.
But no, it's, what's crazy is they were 6 and a half and 8 when I met them. So to be 12 and a half and 14 now. Wow. Watching them grow and everything and the things they do. And like I said, the Christmases and stuff they're into now. Oh my God. Including the 12 and a half. She's turning 13. She's in dance. And when they do these dance performances, she has to wear lashes and makeup and stuff. I'm like, oh, gee, I am not ready.
No, for dating. Have they started dating yet?
Kind of, sort of. The 14-year-old has had crushes, not allowed to date, but has crush and got her heart broken. So we had to deal with that.
That's a pivotal time, man.
It really is. Those years. Oh, God. Everything is so... it's like the magnified by like 100.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're like, yes, you like this person. You have no idea how many more people you're going to meet. You're just in middle school. You're going to be okay.
Oh, my goodness.
For them, it's the end of the world.
It really is. That's their whole world. They've only been around for, you know, like, time doesn't move as fast. It's like an eternity. Yeah. Like, they're never really going to find love again.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Like, I have no clue.
You will have a good chance of selling this pilot when you're done with it. I really do.
Yeah, we'll see.
Last question, like, any advice for people just looking to pivot in general and like their career, not necessarily to writing, just because you pivoted, any advice for that?
They can probably do the things I didn't do, which are actually beneficial. If you want to, you're saying pivot into writing from another career?
Well, no, not necessarily to writing, just pivoting to another career. Like, if they're not happy, like, you weren't happy in your career, you pivoted completely.
Well, knowing that wherever you pivot to, if it's, no matter what age you are, if it's new to you, you still have to start at the bottom.
Right.
Most people
right.
don't pivot to a whole new career and just start as a supervisor. Like, you just, you know, even if I went to go work at McDonald's right now, I could be a grown-ass woman with a master's degree and ran a show. I ain't never worked McDonald's before in my life. I had to start on fries.
Like, right. So you got to be humble, basically.
Yeah, that's the whole part of the pivoting part. That's the
that must have been hard, man. I can imagine.
Yeah, you got to learn this new world at an age where you've already had a career. Like, it's a whole another beast.
And so, you did it, though, and you're happier for it, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to be.
You're trying. It's a tough time, but you're resilient. And
some
you're
days
accepting.
I look up and go, what the fuck?
That's a good full circle right there. You're accepting to bring a really full circle. You're accepting. And I'm so glad we finally got this on tape.
Yes, me too.
And maybe next time you'll have your new house and be in an even better place.
Yes.
We'll have to have a follow up when you sell your show and you're a big deal, which you already are. But
there you go.
I am so glad. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Kelly.
Yeah, everybody, rate, review, subscribe. Okay. Thanks, guys. Thank you for joining us on I Love That For You. Our theme song is by Vaudeville and used with permission. Our cover art is by Jenny Lamb, edited to the best of our abilities by Kelly and Red. If you want us to spotlight someone, have questions, or just want to say hi, email us at ilovethatforyoupod@gmail.com or join us on Instagram at ilovethatforyoupod to join the love fest and see what else we get up to. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, basically wherever else you listen. We appreciate all your love, and if you want to help support the show, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. This helps us spread the love and reach more people. Thanks for listening. We love you.